75D9. I have been looking over Scanner, the intro to The Golden Man and Valis. The continuity is pain, emotional pain. This goes back to tears. It is obvious that I have no defense against pain, that I am a lunatic, one driven mad by, not pain, but by a comprehension of pain, like the Buddha. Comprehension of pain, spiritual and mental especially, is the basis of my writing, as is my awareness of the frailty of life and how easily it passes over into death. Thus, although I have been driven insane by my comprehension, I am not cut off from reality. Hence also, I am a saint. And I write very well. I get it all down on paper. What does this add up to? Okay, I have at last carefully formulated an explanation, as Jim Haynes pointed out. I give my answer. It is an absurd answer, an attempt to explain what cannot be explained, pain, loss, grief, and death. Hence it reveals this. These matters cannot be rationally explained. If they could be, I would have done so. I am smart and persistent. Hence, one can infer that our situation, thrownness, is an irrational one, a point I consider in my explanation. Hence, I expose the ontological irrationality of Dasein, and thus stigmatize all philosophical and theological systems, including my own. We are back, led back, to the raw brute fact of pain, loss, grief, suffering. Perhaps more than anyone else, I reveal the irrational depths underlying reality. My ideological solution is a failure. If I believe in it, I have gone mad. And I state that, too, that I am mad. This only reinforces the relentless picture of irrationality. My madness is merely a piece of it, allied to a greater madness. This is a new and singular worldview. What solution do I propose that works, inasmuch as my Gnostic system obviously does not? Its failure proves its own premise, that of underlying irrationality and irreality and the failure of reason and of systems, humor, love, and beauty, and a firm rootedness in the particular, in the ordinary. It is in the ordinary that my real solution is found, in diametric contradistinction to my bizarre and weird system. Beyond and above my sensitivity to pain and my unwillingness to avoid it. Avoiding it would be evil madness, and the rest of us are guilty of it to some degree, contrasted with me. I am a saint. This is of little use or importance. My insanity, given an insane world, is paradoxically a facing of reality. And this is sane. I refuse to close my eyes and ears. So Y equals Y1, as Pat says. Our world and our proper role in it is paradoxical. The only question is, which kind of madness will we choose? To deny and avoid the irrational reality? I am proof that everyone else is doing this. We are then all mad. But I uniquely choose to go mad while facing pain, not mad while denying pain. These are simply different paths. But mine hurts more. It is not necessarily better. It is more a curiosity. Why would I choose this route? Because I am a saint. I have kept my soul, as now and then an occasional reader realizes. But I have not yet proven that there is a soul. Thus, I may have chosen my route in vain. No known religion encompasses this, even Buddhism. Very strange. Little can be said for my point of view, except that it can't be logically demolished. If it could be, I would have done so. Thus, I am in touch with reality. So then, in what sense am I insane? I am insane in that I continue to face the truth without the ability to come up with a workable answer. All I have done is, 1, indicate the real situation, 2, show that all the known answers, systems of thought, are false. Again, I have shown that the problem cannot be solved or explained, only fled from. This is very disturbing. I indict the whole universe and ourselves as irrational, myself included. I really do not know anything in terms of the solution. I can only state the problem. No other thinker has ever stated a problem and so miserably failed to solve it in human histories. Human thought is, basically, problem-solving, not problem-stating. Again, my very failure to come up with a plausible solution, even when I try, simply verifies the magnitude of the problem. Rather than impugning my problem-solving faculties, it shows that what we normally regard as solution systems really evade the reality and complexity and magnitude of the problem. Fundamental irrationality giving rise to pain, grief, loss, and death. Thus, I am a very dangerous person. Again, my very efforts to produce a solution are alarming because they so blatantly fail. My failure is the failure of all mankind to find a solution or explanation. The fault is not mine. I can say no more. What I have done may be good, it may be bad. But the reality that I discern is the true reality. Thus, I am basically analytical, not creative. My writing is simply a creative way of handling analysis. I am a fictionalizing philosopher, not a novelist. My novel and story writing ability is employed as a means to formulate my perception. Note: Dick is no more a philosopher or theologian than were Vincent van Gogh or L. Ron Hubbard. Dick was one of the most important American novelists of the last half of the 20th century, and what he offered wasn't the clarity and rigor of a philosophical vision, but the imagination and ambiguity of a literary one. The philosophy is erratic, even crackpot, but joined to the act of storytelling, and more importantly, joined to the act of creating characters as fucked up as their author, the result was a synthesis of imagination and idea that spoke more profoundly than any philosophy to the questions of Dick's work. What's the nature of reality? What's the nature of humanity? What's the nature of God? S.E. Endnote. The core of my writing is not art, but truth. Thus, what I tell is the truth, yet I can do nothing to alleviate it, either by deed or explanation. Note: There is something deeply illuminating about Dick's declaration that he is not a novelist, but a fictionalizing philosopher whose concern is not art, but truth. We are here in an apparent paradox, where the concern with truth, the classical goal of the philosopher, is not judged to be in opposition to fiction, but a consequence of fiction and a work of fiction. I think this puts Dick in the same neighborhood as that other self-consciously fictionalizing philosopher, Nietzsche. S.C. Endnote. Yet this seems somehow to help a certain kind of sensitive, troubled person for whom I speak. I think I understand the common ingredient in those whom my writing helps. They cannot or will not blunt their own intimations about the irrational, mysterious nature of reality, and for them, my corpus of writing is one long ratiocination regarding this inexplicable reality, an investigation and presentation, analysis and response, and personal history. My audience will always be limited to these people. It is bad news for them that, indeed, I am slowly going crazy in Santa Ana, California, because this reinforces our mutual realization that no answer, no explanation of this mysterious reality is forthcoming. Note: This phrase originated in a talk that Ursula K. Le Guin gave at Emory University in early 1981, in which she reportedly discussed Dick's preoccupation with unresolvable metaphysical matters. Michael Bishop, who was present at the talk, wrote to Dick, who responded in an open letter to the Science Fiction Review. End note. This is the thrust and direction of modern theoretical physics, as Pat pointed out long ago. I reached it in the 50s. Where this will ultimately go, I can't say. But so far in all these years, no one has come forth to answer the questions I have raised. This is disturbing, but this may be the beginning of a new age of human thought, of new exploration. I may be the start of something promising, an early and incomplete explorer. It may not end with me. What I have shown, like the Michelson-Morley experiment, is that our entire worldview is false. But unlike Einstein, I can provide no new theory that will replace it. However, viewed this way, what I have done is extraordinarily valuable. If you can endure the strain of not knowing and knowing you do not know, my attempt to know Valis is a failure qua explanation. But as further exploration and presentation of the problem, it is priceless. And, to repeat, my absolute failure to concoct a workable explanation is highly significant, i.e., that in this I have failed. It indicates that we are collectively still far from truth. Emotionally, this is useless. But, epistemologically, it is priceless. I am a unique pioneer who is hopelessly lost. And the fact that no one yet can help me is of extraordinary significance. Note. After 7 years of spinning an astonishing plethora of theories, the fact that Dick can now admit to his failure to provide a workable explanation is remarkable. His insight here, that the abstract emerges from the noisy particulars of the world, rather than, as in the Platonic model, from an ideal reality of which empirical reality is a flawed copy, is a growing realization in science studies as well. In How the Laws of Physics Lie, 1983, Nancy Cartwright argues that all that ever actually exists is the noise of the world, from which scientific laws are abstracted. In a very different sense, contemporary interpretations of quantum mechanics provide similar insights. Nobel Prize winner Murray Gell-Mann and his collaborator, James Hartle, have proposed that in the quantum fog represented as probability clouds, certain consistent world histories decohere, assume definite trajectories, and stabilize at a coarse grain level of reality larger than the quantum scale. We might analogize their vision to tiny demons knitting the fabric of the universe according to different instructions. As such, the stabilities that constitute scientific laws emerge from a probabilistic froth at the quantum level, in which different kinds of world trajectories are encoded. In this view, the froth counts as the ultimate reality, and the stability as the epiphenomenon as Dick intuited. NKH. End note. Someone must come along and play the role of Plato to my Socrates. The problem as I see it is that Plato was 180 degrees wrong. The eidos, the abstract, and perfect, does not become the particular, the imperfect. Rather, the question should be, how does the particular, the unique, the imperfect, the local, become the abstract, the eidos, the universal? We must study particulars, the weeds and debris of the alley. The answer is there. I saw the MMSK. And it works the opposite way from how Plato saw it. He saw the ida as ontologically primary and existing prior to the particulars. But I saw the particulars creating idae, or phylogons, as I called them. Thus, permanent eternal reality is built up on and based on the flux realm. All Western metaphysics is 180 degrees off. In 274, my mind understood, and my attention was directed to a squashed dead bird in the alley. The answer is in the imperfect, the particular, not in heaven, not in the perfect abstract form. Then the particular, although transitory, is not epiphenomenal. I have bipolarized these two. Strange. It is the transitory, unique particular which is real, and yet it vanishes. Well, I saw where it goes. All the particulars feed in conceptually to reticulate and arborize and complete the eidae. This is where the truth lies. This is where the answer is. Somehow, the transitory particulars do not in fact ever perish, but are permanently arranged conceptually. This is my one big discovery, and it isn't in Valis. My dope insight of last night. If and when Kathy can be rendered into geometric form, she can be distributed throughout reality and hence will become permanent. This is how the particulars are stored, and this is what Plato calls the forms. It has to do with memory storage. The form is a way to store permanently a whole lot, millions, billions of unique particulars. This is it, and I saw it. 75, D21. I started last night with a complete sense of failure and wound up with this as the one true thing I figured out of importance. The entire universe, possibly, is in the invisible process of turning into the Lord. What is new is my impression that the macro brain came first, i.e., the physical universe, and then it began to think. It generated the macro mind, not the other way around. So Valis is a spontaneous product of the universe, not its creator. It's as if at a certain point in the evolution of human info processing, e.g., a mind came into existence. This would be why there are no reports of my experience in history. Physical reality, including humans, are evolving into a gestalt that abruptly generates a metamind. Reasoning from particulars to I-die, as in my argument supra, i.e., all Western metaphysics is 180 degrees backward. So my meta-abstraction did not just cause me to perceive Valis, but rather caused Valis to occur in and around me. And as a result of it occurring, I perceived it. Sophia. Man is holy. Man is the only true God. This is the new news I bring you. It, Valis, was not there until the my meta-abstraction generated it, virtually ex nihilo. And it evolved it, me, very rapidly. And it embraced the outer world because we are not discrete, but our one continuum or reality field. Thus, Valis is a perturbation in the reality field. 75, D37. We just see the field, the iron filings, the carrier. We do not see the modulation. That 15 seconds last night when I was cut off from memory, comprehension, and knowledge of God was too terrible. It was worse than going mad or dying. If that is the only way that I can be taught what it is that has been given me, so be it. My supreme possession is my comprehension of God. It is to my comprehension of music as my comprehension of music is to world as such. World is to music as music is to God. Since I was in the sixth grade, I have had my comprehension of music, since 374 of God, and it has grown steadily. I realize that now. My best shot is 1. Void, 2. Valis, 3. I am, Anoki, God. 1. Non-being, 2. Being, 3. Consciousness, God. 1. Simplicity, 2. Complexity, 3. Personality identity, God. 1. Eternity, 2. Change, 3. Knowledge, God. 1. Perfection, 2. Power, 3. Wisdom, Torah, Logos, God. 1. Timeless, space, 2. Time, 3. Memory, God. The bells I heard in 374, space, the void. Beethoven's music encloses that space, as I've noted before. He converts space into time and time into space as one thing, space-time, and makes it as a unitary thing perceptible to us. It is motion, i.e. time, in space, audible space, space with a mysterious nonverbal identity presence filling it, moving in it. Movement as structure, being in non-being, the bis and the abyss. Plus, number three, information, i.e., I am Anoki. That which moves through in the space is information, i.e., consciousness. It is conscious changing eternity.